Blog Talk Radio.
Alternative facts.
The following message is transmitted at the request of the United States government. At 12:07 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, numerous unidentified objects of unknown intent and unknown origin were detected at high altitudes over multiple locations of Earth's outer space by the National Radio Astronomy Observatory, and these objects are presumed to be some form of controlled aircraft. It is not known if more of these aircraft will arrive or if they will attempt entering Earth's atmosphere. United States citizens are encouraged to monitor local media outlets, as more updates will follow as information becomes available. The following message is transmitted at the request of the United States government. Attacks by the undead have been reported in several states across the country. The dead are rising from their graves and are attacking the human race. At this time, it is expected that more attacks of this nature will occur in several other states in the next few hours. The intent behind the attack is unknown at this time. He has been observed that a bike for exchange of fluids is a method of transmission. This is an extremely dangerous situation if they crave the taste of human flesh. It is not known whether this event will last for hours, days, or even longer. Stay calm, as authorities have been dispatched to deal with these creatures. An all-clear siren will be sounded when this situation is under control.
Your host, Rodney the Viking Shortridge, wants to give a big old shout out to the Facebook paranormal groups that allow us to post our shows on their pages and helping us to get the word out about all of our guests. If anyone would like to speak to Black Diamond Paranormal Society, BDPS, to discuss your paranormal questions or issues, go to our website at blackdiamondps.org or email blackdiamondps@yahoo.com. As always, our services are free.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us tonight. You can listen in by calling 516-387-1922, or you can go to the Vibe Radio Network website at blogtalkradio.com/Vibe Radio Network. For deep within the heart of the Appalachian Mountains, I'd like to welcome everyone and thank you for listening to Within the Chaos. My name is Rodney Shortridge, and I'll be your host tonight. First off, I'd like to give a shout-out to my cousins up in Ohio, Jennifer and Joe Shortridge of 222 Paranormal. If you get a chance, check out their talk show. You can find them on Facebook under 222 Paranormal.
Have your devices just randomly stopped working? Are you having IT trouble?
Not to worry, Mead's PC Repair Shop can help. We also offer IT support too, including website hosting. We are now also offering full event management services. To find out more, contact our friendly customer service team who will gladly help in any situation. Just call 276-880-8900, or if you prefer, you can stop by our shop at 1089 St. Clair Street, Oakwood, Virginia, 24631, by appointment only, or by visiting the website at meadspcshop.com for more information. Thank you.
Fandom Fest 2019 is hosted and sponsored by Black Diamond Paranormal Society, Blog Talk Radio within the Chaos and Elk Garden School Community Ministry. The Fandom Fest is geared for the like-minded and enthusiasts and researchers in the fields of the paranormal, UFOs, cryptozoology, comics, horror films, gamers, cosplay, metaphysical, spiritual, artists, authors, ancient civilizations, tattoo artists, unexplained mysteries, superheroes, FX horror artists, steampunk, costume contest, sci-fi and so much more. The fest offers a unique and interesting outlook on the abnormal. The Fandom Fest will be held on November 2, 2019 at the Russell County Conference Center, 139 Highland Drive, Lebanon, Virginia. Starting at 10 a.m. and going to 6 p.m. tickets are $7 per person, ages 0 to 6 are free. Four tickets can be reduced to $5 per person with two non-perishable food items, to be donated to the Elk Garden School Community Ministry to help families during the Thanksgiving season. Any non-perishable food donations will be happily received. Also, we will have a free costume contest for all ages. Guest speakers, returning this year, Bill and Chris Reap of Reap Investigations, Giant Researcher Heather Arnold. New to this year's Fandom Fest guest speakers, Dave Spinks, Ron Whitehead, Jake Fife, Chad Zumwalt and Whitney Benson, Amy Green, Barry Gaunt, Cosplay Bridget Baker, CNC Paranormal Investigations, Dennis Estlock, Geo Origis Girls Heather Taylor and Mika Taylor, Haunted MD Donald Molnar, Lucky Belcamino, Michelle Wagner, and Rebecca Smook. Special appearances by Cosplay Bridget Baker, Martial Arts Christian Yaya Thompson and Token Nihilist Cosplay, Arthur Stump, Grace and Lehman, Raphael Bertiz and the Whiteville Ghostbusters. Find us on Facebook Fandom Fest, www.facebook.com/FandomFest. Our website, www.phantomfest.org. Our email, phantomfest1@yahoo.com. For more information, please contact Rodney Shortridge at 276-970-1456 or Josh Mead at 276-880-8900, extension 1259.
Well, howdy, everyone. Tonight, our special guest is Willie Dalton. Willie is a local native of our great Appalachians of Pownall, Virginia. She is the author of the urban fantasy Gravedigger series. Willie's first novel, Three Witches in a Small Town, was the winner of the 2015 Believe the Achieve Award. Her books are available on Audible as well through Amazon.com. When Willie isn't writing, she's rescuing cats and planning her next story. So it's my honor to introduce Willie Dalton. Hello, Willie, and thank you for joining me tonight. It's such an honor to have you on.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Rodney. It's a pleasure.
Well, I'll just start out real quick. We'll just go with, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself and what got you into writing.
Well, you know, I grew up here in Pownall, Virginia, and there's, you know, so many stories and old wives' tales, and, you know, my mom and my grandma read to me all the time when I was little, and I was an only child, so I spent a whole lot of time, you know, playing and making up my own stories and own games, and I started writing when I was writing stories when I was probably about 11 or 12, and I've been writing ever since.
Boy, I know about that. I'm originally from down Buchanan County, and I do know about not having nothing and just making up stuff.
Yep. I mean, people complain about it, but it gives you a good imagination.
Oh, it does. I know when I was growing up, I mean, we lived there, a little bitty town. The only thing you had was a post office called Road. And I stayed in the mountains. I would go up in the woods, and you see all these survival shows and YouTube shows where they're teaching you how to make fire and build shelter. And I'm like, hell, I was doing that, just playing and having fun.
Right? Yeah, that's the way it is.
Yeah. Well, can you explain, you know, your process of writing?
Sure. I've always been what I never knew it had a name until I started researching and talking to other authors. But there's two different kinds of writers. There are plotters, or they know everything and plan everything that's going to happen in their book. And then there are pantsers, because they say they write by the seat of their pants. And I'm definitely the latter. I really, other than a basic idea for the story I want to tell, I don't plan it out at all. I just kind of write it and let the characters tell me the story, and I just write it down. So different things inspire, you know, different books. My first book, Three Witches in a Small Town, is very Appalachian. It's about mountain witches, granny witches. I actually had the idea for that one from a dream. And then the second book that I wrote, The Dark Side of the Woods, it's set in Cumberland Gap, Tennessee, and I got the idea for that one when I was hiking over there in the park. It was just a really beautiful little area where one side was a really bright, sunny meadow, and then the other side was woods, and it was really dark and dense, and I just kind of felt like eyes were watching me as I walked through there, and I got pretty much the idea for that whole story right there. And then the Gravedigger series, probably a little more morbid, but like I said, you know, I spend a lot of time rescuing cats. I help with a local rescue, and I'm one of the only people who would take in the teeny tiny bottle babies and the kittens that really didn't have a good chance. So I spend a lot of time burying kittens and digging graves for them. And so the idea for a book about a woman who's a gravedigger just came to mind. And I put a supernatural spin on pretty much everything that I write. So it just kind of snowballed from there.
Oh. Well, your first book about the witches, have you dealt with any witches, especially here in Southwest Virginia?
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, not a lot of the kind of witches that I talk about in my book, most of the mountain people wouldn't qualify themselves as witches. More of just, you know, old folk remedies and that kind of thing, or using Bible verses to heal. You know, that sort of thing is, it's still considered a type of folk magic. It's still, you know, a granny witch or whatever you want to call it, even if they're, you know, very much Christian. And I know a lot of those people, and I grew up that way myself. So I had a pretty good basis in how that all works.
With you being, from a small town, does that help with your inspiration, you know, for your books and your writings?
I think so. It definitely makes it easier to write about small towns when you grew up in one and have lived your whole life in one, and in some ways kind of, well, I grew up in Pound, so everyone knows each other, but unless you're really involved in the school or the community, you still kind of feel like an outsider. So I was homeschooled growing up, so everyone kind of knew who I was, but since I wasn't in the public school, I was still definitely an outsider. And so it kind of gave me a way to observe, you know, the cliques and the way everything kind of ran. And I think that that's definitely helped in, I've always been an observer. Everyone has always said that I'm shy, and I'm really not. It's just that I always am watching and listening, and rather than, you know, putting my opinion in there. And I think that, I think being that way has helped me really kind of figure out, you know, how people talk, what they talk about, what their focus is, what they think about things. And it's easy for me to translate that into my stories. So my characters feel very real.
Okay. Well, with our area, Southwest Virginia, you know, where it's coal country, does any of your stories or future books reflect, you know, any of the lives or legends and myths of coal mining?
I haven't incorporated a lot in particular about coal. I think I mention it, and I think I mention it some in Three Witches in a Small Town. Just that I think their grandfather was a coal miner. But beyond that, I haven't gone much into anything surrounding the coal mines. I did have a short story. You know, another thing that we hear a lot in this area is about that's, you know, kind of everyone either says, oh, it's definitely true, or other people say, oh, there's no way, is, you know, the fact that we have black panthers in the mountains. And I did write a short story that was published about a black panther, and some of the elements in that story were told to me by my grandparents. So that was really fun, and I'm hoping to write more stories, you know, more local kind of things that are very traditional Appalachian. I kind of got out of it with this Great with the Gravedigger series because it does go more into the underworld. But I really love writing about our area.
Yeah, our area has a lot of history, myths, legends. It's past, I guess, all my life, some of the stories that people have told me, and because, you know, my family worked in the mines. I worked in the mines for a little bit in coal business, and plus I drove a truck cross country and seen things that I couldn't explain. And I'm like, you know, right. If I could write that, I bet that'd be a damn good book. Well, speaking of our area, you know, how do your books represent our area's culture and dialect?
As far as dialect, that can be a little tricky, but because I was at a workshop, you know, one thing that you know, you get different information. You think you want to, when you're trying to convey like an accent, you know, you write it as if, you know, kind of like you would sound it out. So, you know, it's written like you would hear it said. But that's really not always the best way to convey it because, you know, you're going to an audience that may not understand that at all. And so that can be a little tricky. So you just have to find other ways to convey the feel of the area. But I try to me, while of course every area has its issues or small, you know, small towns, that kind of thing, there's always things that, you know, we think could be better. Or people, you know, get frustrated because there's not much to do around here. But to me, these mountains, the whole, you know, Southwest Virginia, Appalachian Mountain region that we're in is just very magical. I think there's, so, you know, like you said, there's so many things that people experience here that they can't explain. And people have such strong faith, whether it's, you know, in their religion or, you know, just in their beliefs of this is what I saw as I grew up and this is what I know to be true. I try to really convey that strength. And it's just such an old kind of energy here that just is very grounding and rooted. I had a guy at work yesterday, a customer came through and he was saying how, you know, he wasn't from the area, but his wife was, and he had been trying for 45 years to get her to move, and he just couldn't budge her. And I just had to laugh because I've heard that so many times, you know, the area just kind of holds you. And if you move away, you always, you know, want to come back. You always miss it. There's something, you know, there's something very drawing about this area, especially if you're from it.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Because, again, like I said, when I drove truck cross country, I don't know how many times I'd stop at a truck stop and be talking to someone. They're like, "Where are you from?" And I'm like, "I'm from Virginia." "What part of Virginia?" "I've never heard nobody speak like you do." I'm like, "I'm from that part of Virginia where we got our ass kicked in the Civil War. That one." And they're like, "Oh, okay. You got shoes on?" I'm like, "Yeah, I got. That's West Virginia, people. You got wrong one, wrong place."
Right? Yeah, yeah, if you say Southwest Virginia, and you have to really specify, not West Virginia.
Yeah, every time. They all automatically mm-hmm. think of West Virginia.
Yep.
Well, what other types of writing do you do or would you like to pursue?
I've done a little, I mean, like I said, I've been writing since I was 11 or 12, so I've written a little bit of everything. Right now, in addition to trying to finish up the Gravedigger series, I'm working on a young adult book. It's still kind of got a creepy element, but it's set in our area. But I'm just getting started on it, so I really don't have, you know, have a whole lot of information on it. But I'm excited to write something because everything else I've written has been more geared, of course, toward adults. But I have a 11, almost 12-year-old daughter who's been wanting me to write something for her age group. And so I'm pretty excited to tell kind of a spooky story from a small-town perspective and try writing for that age group.
Oh, cool. Well, are there any people in your life that influenced you to become a writer, that pushed you into it, or just, you know, help you along the way?
Well, I'm not a very good person to push. The more somebody, you know, tries to encourage me to do something, generally the more I run away from it. But as far as influences, my whole family has always been really big on reading. And my mom was always great about letting me, you know, read anything I was kind of drawn to. And when I started writing, I was very secretive. I didn't tell anybody I was writing stories. I didn't want anybody to read them. It was very much just for me. And so I think, you know, just my family letting me kind of do my own thing was more of an encouragement than them saying, "Hey, you should do this." And I enjoyed it so much. And I actually, like I said, I never let anybody read it, though. And whenever I started writing my first book when I was 16, but kept it very well, you know, hidden, wouldn't let anybody know I was working on it or read it. And whenever I found out my first book was going to be published, I was beyond excited. And then I was absolutely terrified because it dawned on me that a lot of people were going to be reading it. But luckily that's something I got over pretty quickly.
Cool. Well, have you written anything about your family? The reason why I asked this, my daughter, she writes too. And she's wrote about growing up and I guess how I was a terrible father and, you know, how all of us were terrible people. And I told her, I said, you know, they were some happy times. Did you write about that? And she's like, "No, Dad, we're all the bad stuff." So, I mean, have you ever heard about your family like that?
I really haven't. There's little, you know, people close to me try to figure out like my characters and stuff, like, "Oh, you based this after this person," especially when my first book came out. Everyone's like, "Oh, you based this character on so and so in your family, and you based this character on your friend." And I said, "Well, no, not really." I said, "I mean, I take little elements of people and family and put them in my characters and in my stories, but no one person is, or no one character is based on any one person. I really don't have anything in any of my books that fully represents anybody that I know, and I haven't written any nonfiction stories. So I haven't written any stories about my family or growing up, and I've had a few people tell me that I should. And I may, just for, you know, just for family history kind of thing, but I don't think it's something that I would share. To me, I just, well, some of the stories are just, would be too difficult to share. Like, my mom has tried to encourage me to write, like, my grandmother's story growing up. And I just, knowing a little bit of, like, the difficulties and stuff that she faced and went through as a child and a teenager, I just don't think I have the heart to put that down, to write it myself.
Well, I understand that. Well, who's your favorite authors?
I have so many. Some of my bigger influences, when I was growing up, I loved classics so much. Charles Dickens and Robert Louis Stevenson were my favorites to read when I was a teenager growing up. And then the one that kind of got me into more supernatural or urban fantasy genre was Laurel K. Hamilton. And she was writing in that genre about, you know, vampires and werewolves and all of that, from, you know, a modern day telling, you know, before everyone else was doing it. And of course, I love Stephen King and Neil Gaiman is just extremely talented, one of my favorites right now. And another classic author that I just absolutely adore, pretty much everything that he wrote, is Oscar Wilde. He's my favorite author to just sit down and read, because I feel like every word that he, you know, every sentence that he writes is very quotable. And then, yeah, there's just so many. I love most of the classic authors, but then modern day, Laurel K. Hamilton, Stephen King, Neil Gaiman. For horror, along with Stephen King, I really love the author Poppy Z. Bratt. She writes very dark horror, and but it's written, like, her choice of words are just so perfect and beautiful that even though it's dark and at times gory, I still really, really just love to read the way that she puts the words together.
Cool. Well, is there any authors that you've worked with or would like to work with?
There's so many. I've met so many authors in the business. It's really, really hard to say. I haven't done any co-writing. I haven't written with any other authors, but I would love to collaborate with, if you're really, you know, kind of reaching for the stars kind of thing. Probably my ideal would be to collaborate with somebody like Neil Gaiman, but on a more local level, we have a lot of really great, so many great Appalachian authors. One writer who's a friend of mine, she tends to write more nonfiction pieces, but she just writes really beautifully, is Kelly Haywood.
Okay.
So that would probably be my pick for that.
Oh, okay. Well, within each of your books, who would you say was the most challenging character to write?
Let's see. Within Three Witches in a Small Town, the most challenging character to write is probably the character of Wesley. He's one of the romantic suitors in the book for one of the girls, for one of the sisters. And like I said, I don't really plan out my book, my stories, or my characters. I just kind of let them tell me what they're doing. And I know that sounds so strange to people who don't write or work that way. But, you know, I would think that, you know, the situation was going to work out one way and then the character would do something else. And he kind of got on my nerves in writing him. So he was a little bit difficult. It's really hard to sit down and write something that you know, don't want to happen, I guess you should say. So that he was the most difficult for that book. And I don't think I had any real difficulty with any of the characters in The Dark Side of the Woods. And that one's still my favorite that I've written. I just really love everything about it. I love the location. I love all of the characters, the way the story flows. I didn't really have any problems with any in that one. And then in my Gravedigger series, it's the main character. Everything changes so suddenly from book to book. And sometimes, you know, multiple times within a book, that I'm trying to, you know, let the story flow and write what's going on, but to explain how she's coping with things that are going on and kind of justify it in ways, that's been a little challenging.
Well, what would you say is the most important part of writing?
Most important part of writing is definitely to sit down and make yourself write. It's so easy to get distracted. The most important thing is to just write, because you can't get better unless you're working at it. You learn your tendencies, where you need to make things more interesting, where you need to lose detail, where you need to add detail, how to make your characters more relatable. I mean, you learn everything you need to know about writing from writing. So the most important thing is to devote the time to do it.
Okay. What is the strangest or weirdest story that has been told to you by someone while maybe researching your books or just growing up?
Weirdest story. I'm trying to think. I've had a lot of people come up to me at book events and try to tell me about their strange stories. There was one guy trying to tell me about this murder that his family or somebody was involved with, and how it tied into, I think, the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. That was pretty strange, and I can't remember all the details to that. But that was probably the strangest.
Wow.
Yeah, well, that's what I thought.
No kidding. I've been sitting there going, "What, dude, can you explain? Here, let me get a recorder. I got to record, dude."
I have a lot of people telling me I need to write their stories, and I'm like, I have so many stories in my head, it's going to take me all my life to get them told. So I try to encourage people. I'm like, if you think your story needs to be a book, you need to write it, because nobody's going to be able to tell it like you can.
Yeah, that's what my daughter keeps telling me. I said, I can't even build a tree unless, you know,
that's why there are editors. You write it in your words, and then somebody else can make it readable.
Well, she even told me one, because I've had a lot of strange stuff happen to me throughout my life, and I've told my kids these stories and stuff growing up, and you know, and now my daughter's like, "Dad, you know, you're ready to turn 50. You need to sit down and write." I said, "What if I just sit down and record, just tell my life on video or recorder?" She's like, "Hell, that's even better."
Like, okay. There you go. Yep.
I'm like, I don't know. I said, somebody's going to be able to go, "What word was that that he said?" Was that right? Not right? What was that?
See, that just adds character, though. You should definitely do it.
I don't know. I might. I don't know who would want to read it. But it'd be a good paperweight, I guess. Okay. Who or what is an anti-hero, and how do they relate to today's pop culture?
Oh, goodness. It's past my bedtime to be answering complicated questions like that. Let me think for a second.
Keep it simple, Rod. You're like, damn, that old country boy threw out a big in there.
That takes more brain power than I've got after work. Let's see. An anti-hero. I'm trying to think. I don't know exactly who I would say, and I'm not good at relating things to pop culture because I honestly don't really keep up with it. I tend to stay in my... Huh?
I said, you want me to let you off the hook?
Yeah, let me off the hook with that one, because I'm just not going to be able to think. And then, like I said, relating it to pop culture, I couldn't tell you much about pop culture right now.
My bad. That's my fault.
That's all right. Trying to keep me on my toes.
I try. I try to keep people on their toes. I love it when I talk to some, doctor, professor or something, and then I ask a question. They're like, I've been doing interviews for 30 years and I ain't had no one ask me that. I'm like, well, it's old
right?
Country boy from Virginia did. What's
you
answer?
Got it.
They're like, well, let me think about it. Well, could you see your books becoming like a series drama for TV or maybe a movie someday?
I would really love that. I think most authors spend a little bit of time thinking about, the possibility of that or who would play what characters and that kind of thing. Of course, with Adriana Trigiani, writing Big Stone Gap and making that movie, think about the idea of, your books being turned into shows or movies, and especially set in, local area. That would be really cool. Probably if it was going to happen, it would be either The Three Witches in a Small Town, just because it's more of a family story with a little bit of a twist. I could see being made into a TV show or the Gravedigger series. I could definitely see being a show on like FX or HBO, something like that, that does tend to include a little bit more of the supernatural feel to it, that kind of thing. I think that's probably one of my future dreams that would be pretty fantastic to happen.
Well, if it does, I get exclusive interviews with you, seeing how...
Absolutely.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Well, if your book was able to go on to TV or big screen, would you like to play a character from your book? And if so, which one would you prefer?
Let's see. I'm trying to think. This is one, not even the one that I mentioned, just being made into a TV or series. I mean, I would love to be in the sidelines or, do like a little side character, but I don't think I would want to play one of the main characters unless it was somehow The Dark Side of the Woods. And then I would be happy to play the main character, even though at this point I'm too old to play her. But just because she's my favorite. And that whole story is my favorite. So I would be good with playing her. Her name's Sadie. So I would be happy to be Sadie. But in Three Witches in a Small Town, I'd kind of just want to be just a little side character watching everybody else. And the same with The Girl Who Digs Graves or The Gravedigger, any part of the Gravedigger series. I would rather watch professionals do their job instead of me messing it up.
That's awesome. Well, which do you prefer, a scary movie or a scary book, and why?
I definitely prefer a scary book. It just holds me longer, and I can get deeper into the story and feel more for the characters. I think that's one thing that most scary movies are lacking, is you don't feel very much connection to the character. You're watching things happen to someone, versus in books you really connect. You know, you have more time to build that character development, create a relationship as far as why, you know, you want to care about the character, why you want her to make it out, why you want them to get away, any of that. And my biggest flaw these days with scary movies is almost always the ending. It never feels like things are, which I know they don't want you to feel like things are finished, because, you know, they may make a sequel, but I just never feel like the ending is as good as the rest of the story. And endings are hard. Endings are very hard for writers, you know, for books, I'm sure, just as well as movies. But I feel like books are a little bit better at tying things up, or leaving you with that sense of dread, versus the movies, it's kind of anticlimactic. You're just left hanging, but you're not left wanting, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, are you good at storytelling or just writing a story?
I'm good at writing a story. I wish I was good at storytelling. I've been asked a few times to do that, and I usually just end up trying to memorize one of my short stories to kind of tell. But I'm good at reading, you know, reading my stories and that kind of thing. But I'm not a good storyteller. I can't really, you know, just look at the audience and pull you in and make you feel like you were there. I love to go and listen to storytellers, but that's, I guess I'm just, I don't know if I'm too introverted or what, but it has to be just me and a, you know, me and a piece of paper and a pencil to really sit down and write a good story.
Well, what advice would you give an upcoming writer?
To write as much as you can and to read as much as you can. You know, even if you don't have a lot of time, listen to books. Find a type of, not a genre, but find a writer that you just love everything they say. The way they describe things, how much detail you like to hear about in the story. You know, some people like pages and pages of detail, mixed in with the story itself. And then me, I like a little bit of detail and then use my imagination for how everything else looks and feels and sounds. But I want to know the story. I want to know what's going on. I want a lot of dialogue with the people. That's what I like. So that's how I write. But find what your style is and try to stick with that. Even if you change, you know, and write in different genres, you know your strengths. I've been asked to teach a couple of workshops on dialogue because it came as a big surprise to me, but a lot of writers have trouble with writing dialogue between characters. And my books are mostly dialogue between characters. It comes very easy to me because I listen to people's conversations, how they talk, how they, you know, communicate with each other, how they would say or phrase certain things depending on where they're from. And so I've taught a little bit on that, and I love writing dialogue. For some people, I don't put enough detail in my books. They're like, well, you know, you didn't explain this or how this looked or how this felt. And I'm like, well, but use your imagination just a little bit. But some people don't like that. So finding your style is most important, really, really honing it so that you're comfortable with it. And if you do that and you like what you write yourself, you'll find a good audience.
Okay. Well, are you, would, is there any place, you know, in the country that you would like to investigate for a book, for any type of legend, for a book or a series?
Oh, I'm sure there are tons of places. One of my favorite places is New Orleans. I really love the French Quarter of New Orleans, and it's a really good place for me to go and write. I just feel like there's so much inspiration kind of around every corner. And, you know, it's so, so old, and there's just history and everything. There's so much history. I would like to spend more time there and get to dive a little bit deeper into some of the old legends. And then locally, I've found most of my inspiration. Like, anytime I go over to Cumberland Gap, I could just stay there for hours and hours and wander around, and it really just kind of pulls me in. But as far as exploring any other like legends, I would just really like to talk to you know, more people and get their experiences with anything supernatural, with, you know, probably with people who went and saw healers, you know, the granny witches and that kind of thing. I know my uncle, someone had told him a story about this woman who was supposedly a witch, but not a good one. She wasn't a healer. And how she had scared this guy off in the wintertime by turning a branch into a snake. I would like to talk to people who've had experiences like that. So it wouldn't really matter where they were. I would just like to find out more about people like that and write stories about things of that nature, because I find it so interesting.
Well, I'll tell you a little story since you brought up a witch. When I was a kid growing up, my grandparents and, of course, my dad and my aunts and uncles, I always talked about my grandfather having a milking cow. And apparently a witch lived up in the hollow, and somehow my papa pissed her off. Well, she put a curse on the milking cow, and it wouldn't milk no more. So my papa got mad and took a 2x4 out there and hit it in the head. And they said that woman comes running and screaming out of the holler, blood, her face and head was all bloody. And they never seen her again after that.
Wow.
Now, what's
I've heard stuff like that. It's just so unreal. But I've heard enough people share stories like that, that, you know, I just have to believe something, you know, is going on there. So I would love to compile like a book of stories along those lines, just really strange, far out there things, you know, from the mountains. That would be really, really fun.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great. And speaking of supernatural and unexplained, you know, especially here within the Appalachian Mountains, you know, they've been sightings of Bigfoot all over the place. The Brown Mountain Lights of North Carolina, the Mothman of Point Pleasant, West Virginia, the Moon Eyed People of the Smoky Mountains, the Bell Witch Hauntings of Adams, Tennessee, the Flatwoods Monster of Flatwoods, West Virginia. Boy, that's a lot, ain't it? Does any of these might interest you, and, you know, maybe a future book, or do you like shy away from stuff like this?
Oh, no, I think it's great. I would definitely be interested. I think I would have a little, I don't know. I love all the legends and things like that, and I would pursue pretty much any of those except for maybe Bigfoot. And I don't know why. It just doesn't interest me as much. Now, I do something interesting. It's been years ago, but we're coming through that part of North Carolina where they have the Brown Mountain Lights. And I wasn't familiar with it. I mean, I'd heard of it, but I don't think I realized that that's where we were. It was daytime. And I started feeling so, so sick and got this really weird headache. And I just knew that it was like the town that we were in. And I was married at the time, and I told my husband, I said, I don't like this town. Like, I don't know what it is. I don't like it. It doesn't feel good. I don't want to be here. Like, let's hurry and drive through it. And it was such a strong feeling, like such a bad feeling, that I said something like, I know there's something about this town somewhere. So I ended up looking it up on Google while we were on the road. And that's when the Brown Mountain Lights came up. And I was like, I knew that there was something going on here. And and it lasted for even like a little bit after we left the town and just slowly faded the further we got out. So part of me would be super interested to do some more research and maybe write a story about it. I don't know that I would actually go there to do my research, given the way that I felt when we were just driving through it. But it was very, it intrigues me because it was such a strong thing.
Yeah, I have let's see, right here where I live in a valley. And it's been about 2 years ago, but for about 3 years in a row, during the summer and late spring, because I'm fascinated with all this stuff. And mm-hmm. Where I've heard these calls and watched them on TV of what they consider a Bigfoot. Well, you know mm-hmm. how it is around here. You leave your windows open during the spring and fall, and it's about 2-3 o'clock in the morning. I'm sitting here working, and all of a sudden I heard that yelling. And I'm like, who the hell's outside yelling? So I went outside, and I could hear it. And it had every dog and coyote. I mean, it was creepy. And
oh, gosh.
I hollered back to see what it would do. And uh-huh. it stopped. And a dog stopped, and a coyote stopped. And I'm like, I don't think that was a good idea. And I just kind of stood there, and everything was real quiet. And all of a sudden, it started howling and yelling like that again, and it sounded a whole lot closer than what it was. And
oh,
I was
no.
like, well, I'll be going inside. Shut the windows. Yeah, turn the AC off. Yeah, we're good. But this happened three years in a row. I haven't heard it in the past 2 years, but, yeah, that's kind of freaky.
Yeah, that's definitely freaky. Goodness. I am really curious about what it is that people have seen and heard and that kind of thing as far as Bigfoot. But, I don't know. I guess it's because it's been made into a bit of a joke. I have a little bit harder time finding interest in the story of whatever it is that's really out there. But people have seen things like that all over the place. So I definitely think there's something to it. Like to so many of the stories. But yeah, it's all, I love it all. It's all super fascinating. It's not a supernatural story, but it was pretty cool. I was living in Pound, but there were woods behind the house. And then there was the 4-lane not too far from the house out in front. And I was already asleep and hadn't been asleep too long, probably. And I was dreaming that I was hearing somebody scream. And I woke up and I was still hearing it. And my cat was perched looking out the window. So he obviously heard something too. And my first thought was, something's been hit down on the road. And then just very slowly, the thought crept in. I was like, that was a mountain lion. Because, I always grew up here, they sound just like somebody screaming. And so once that thought settled in, I was like, oh my gosh, there's a mountain lion not too far from us. So that was really, really interesting. My neighbors who lived just up the road, the next time I saw them, they were asking, if I had heard it, and I told them I had, and they said that they had actually seen it passing through the woods, you know, behind their house. So that was one of my more interesting experiences of one of those animals that, you know, people talk about but rarely see.
Oh, wow. Dang. So,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
These mountains, man, I've been all over, especially in Buchanan County, and I've seen things, like I said, and heard things that I tell my parents, especially my dad, and dad's like, don't be telling nobody, they think you're crazy, boy.
Right.
So I kind of kept it to myself. But you know what my dad did? He went and told everybody what I was seeing and hearing. And that's how I got into the paranormal. Because my uncle came up to me and he was like, hey, Rod, I heard that you see and hear things. I'm like, I don't know how to answer that. And he's like, I got some recordings I want you to listen to. Tell me what you hear. And I told him what I heard. And he's like, exactly. You know, you should get into this.
Yeah, kind of led towards the things that, you know, that we're interested in. I think it's really cool.
Oh, I do too. So what's your opinions about cult?
About what?
Cult. C-U-L-T-S.
Cult?
Yeah, not C-O, C-U.
As far as in general or...
In general, anything that you would be interested in studying, writing, researching about, or bad, stay away?
Well, I think there's a lot more cults than people are aware of, and people tend to want to congregate and, you know, encourage people to see their point of view. So I think there are a lot of little cults, and you know, I'll probably get a little bit of flack for this, but I think a lot of, not religions in particular, but a lot of, you know, individual churches kind of form their own cults.
I agree.
And I think anytime that, you know, you're that close with a group of people and kind of starting to turn away from, you know, your family or your friends, you're getting into dangerous territory. But I think cults are extremely interesting to study and read about and observe that kind of thing. I think it would actually be really fun to write a book or a short story about, you know, kind of an old mountain church being very, you know, being a cult in its own right. I think that would be a really fun story, since I like writing kind of creepy stuff. But yeah, I was actually having this conversation with a friend the other night, because he enjoys reading and studying about cults and was telling me about all these different ones. And so I'm not very well versed on the specifics of, you know, a lot of the cults that have been more famous and that there's a lot of information about. I know a few. I guess I've always learned more about the, you know, about the occult versus individual cults. But yeah, I think it would be, now, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm kind of itching to write some kind of story along those lines.
Well, what do you think is behind, you know, they talk about when you die, you know, behind the veil. What do you think is behind the veil after death?
I honestly think that I don't think there's one straight path. I think a lot of it has to do with whether or not you completed, you know, whatever mission it was you came here for, how attached you are to this dimensional plane. You know, I think some people's spirits pass over easily, whether it's because they're excited about going to heaven or excited to, you know, just move on and see what's next. And then I think some people are so based in fear or, you know, tied to their earthly possessions or family that their, you know, their spirits can linger. So I think there's a lot of different things, you know, behind the veil. I think a lot of different things can happen after we die. You know, you hear about spirits getting trapped, and then some people who just, you know, pass over so easily and, you know, kind of knew it was coming and not afraid. And so I think it can go a lot of different ways. I think, like with most things in this world, it's not a black and white, you know, you die, you do, you know, you die, this happens. I think there's more than one option on what's going to happen.
Well, what's your thought on mountain fairies? I hope you understand.
Mountain fairies?
Yeah, I was going to say, I hope she understood that one.
I did. Now, I believe in all sorts of nature spirits. So I think pretty much anywhere is going to have, you know, land and earth spirits. And in my research about, you know, beings like that, they tend to be pretty neutral and a little bit mischievous. And, you know, I like the idea of the land being blessed by, you know, by these other little beings. And I think a lot of, I guess I don't know as much in particular about, you know, other areas, you know, Irish or however, you know, they believe in the Fae and that kind of thing. But I think there are some areas you just walk through and you kind of feel that there's something else there. And my daughter and I, we've always watched, I don't know if you've ever paid attention, like you can be looking at a plant or a tree and one leaf will just be like going crazy on the tree, like going up and down, and there's no breeze and all the other leaves on the tree are still. And I've always, you know, told her, I said, that's a fairy. I said, there's a fairy there. I said, it's jumping up and down on the leaf. And so now, you know, she's still, even though she's older, she's like, Mom, there's a fairy over there. And so many times, and I've even really freaked my friends out before by pointing it out. And I said, when you notice and call your attention to it, it stops. And on almost every single time, that's exactly what happens.
Yep.
And so, I mean, you just have to, you know, have to believe in things like that. And I still know older people who put out, you know, things near their plants. Like if a plant's not doing good, they'll put out a little bit of candy or a little bit of, you know, moonshine or whatever kind of alcohol they have for the land spirits to, you know, help their garden or their flowers or whatever. As, you know, kind of a little offering. And I think they don't put as much thought into it because it's something that they were taught to do. But I love it. I think it's awesome. I think there's so many things that people aren't aware of or, you know, don't really understand or know about. And that's okay. I think it's cool to have mysteries.
Okay. Well, have you ever had an unexplained or paranormal experience, you know, that has left a significant mark in your life? And if so, can you describe it and explain it?
I've had a couple of experiences with ghosts. We had a store. My family had a store in this old, really old building. And the building had been, I don't know how many different things it had been, but at one time it had been like a saloon and brothel. And we liked the store and we were really comfortable there, but we would frequently hear like a little kid laughing and just feel a distinct presence, you know, in different areas. Things would go missing, tools, almost always tools. Like if you laid a hammer or a screwdriver down, you would turn around and it would be gone and you'd find it somewhere totally different. And that was all fun, but we made sure not to be there by ourselves once it got dark, because once it got dark, you would feel like there was someone standing between you and the door to leave. And you would hear the open sign. If you were in the back, you'd hear the open sign up front click on and off. So that was a little creepy. So we would always make sure we weren't there by ourselves. But nothing ever really truly bothered us. And then another time I was at my mama's house, and I was it was pretty late, and I had laid down to go to sleep, and I had the radio on. And it was, you know, kind of as you fall asleep, whatever's you know, on in the room seems to get louder. Well, the radio seemed like it got a lot louder, and I kind of woke up enough to, you know, to plan to get up and go turn it down. And whenever I opened my eyes, my great-grandmother, because I had met her before. I was little when she passed away, but I did meet her. But it was her, just as clear as day, standing at the foot of the bed. And she was just standing there, and it didn't scare me, and it didn't bother me. It was just kind of a strange thing, but it was, but she looked, you know, very clear, very real. And I just kind of watched her for a second, and then she just kind of faded away, and I got up and turned the radio down and got back in bed and just kind of wondered what that was, you know, what that was about. But I think it was just her kind of looking in on me. And so those were the clearest, experiences that, that I've had. And then as far as other supernatural things that have happened, a friend of mine and I were, driving to her sister's house. It was pretty late one night, and so this I still have absolutely no idea what it was. Saw this thing that looked sort of like a scarecrow in her sister's yard, and her sister lived in this really nice area. There were no scarecrows. I mean, it was, you know, there were houses all around. She lived near a big lake. There were no scarecrows in the yard. And it was all black. It looked, you know, like if a scarecrow, you know, has its arms outstretched, only it kind of looked like it had wings. And there wasn't, you really couldn't see any definition. It was just a very strange shaped thing, you know, humanoid type thing. And I didn't say anything for a minute. She didn't say anything. And I was just, and so we drove on up and looked back, and it was gone. I said, "Did you see that?" And she said, "Yeah, I saw that." I said, "You don't have any idea what it was either?" She said, "No clue." And that was it. I mean, we neither of us have any idea what it was. I've never had another experience like that. So I have no clue. But it was, that one was a little scary.
Oh, I bet. Well, seeing how there's like a church every quarter of a mile from area to area in Southwest Virginia, does religion play a part in your writings or any of your stories?
It does. It plays a big part. In Three Witches in a Small Town, all of you know, the girls were raised Christian, but they practice folk magic, and it was important for me to include that because so many people in this area who do, you know, whether it's tradition or, you know, Bible verses, their Christian faith still plays such a huge part, you know, in their beliefs. It was important for me to include that, that, you know, there are types of folk magic and belief that you can still be any faith, you know, that you want, including Christian. And then in the Gravedigger series, I incorporate all sorts of different religious beliefs, because I incorporate a lot of stuff from the underworld. So there's a good amount of Greek mythology and Norse mythology, and kind of the basis for the story is, you know, when you die, you kind of choose a path, you know, whether it's one that you followed, you know, in your, you know, when you were alive, or, you know, if you have basically time left to decide once you die, like which underworld, which afterlife you're going to spend time in. So I did a good amount of research on a few different religions for how their afterlife would be.
Cool. Well, what is your opinion on what a demon is, and have you ever experienced that or known anyone to have an experience of a demonic presence?
I haven't experienced anything personally with anything demonic, thankfully. I think, you know, demonic energy is just very, very harmful, negative energy that whether it's, you know, created by the person themselves and it kind of summons a negative being to them who's intent on self-harm or harming the individual, depending on how strong it is. And it seems like I've heard people talk about, you know, their dealings with them, but nothing to the extent of other stories you hear. I've always kind of shied away from that aspect of it, as far as in reality. I've read stories and things, and I find it very interesting. But I'm also a pretty cautious person, so I haven't done a lot of delving into it, you know, or seeking it out. And thankfully, like I said, I haven't had anyone close to me with any kind of super personal experiences with them.
Okay. Well, Ouija boards, I know it's always been a hot topic, especially in the paranormal community. Is that something that you may have delved in or maybe would consider writing in a book or about in a book?
I would definitely put it in a book, depending on, you know, if the story called for it. I see no problem in writing about it. But personally, I've never used one. I don't feel like I'm well versed enough in being able to handle it or use it properly. I know people who use them without any problems, and who say that they're, you know, safe if you know what you're doing. And then I know tons of people who've had really bad experiences. So I tend to shy away from them and encourage others to do the same, unless they are way more, you know, educated on the safety and proper use of them than I am. But yeah, I would definitely put something about them in the story.
Well, have you watched any of the paranormal TV shows that's been on for the past 15 years or so?
I've watched most of them, and I absolutely love them. I really like Paranormal Survivor. Is a good one, but my favorite paranormal show is Dead Files, with Amy Allen. I really like the way she's just amazingly accurate, and I like that they have you know, the guy Steve there to find out the history of the place and get all the information to see what matches up. I don't know. I like their personalities, and I like how she, I like that not everyone is the same or cookie cutter, and you don't fix it the same way. And, you know, smudging's not just going to take care of all of it. Sometimes it's fixable, sometimes it's not. And it's just more, I don't know, it just makes more sense to me.
What do you think these paranormal TV shows are helping or hurting the paranormal field?
I really think it varies. I think some are helping, and I think some are more detrimental, like the ones that go in and try to, you know, stir up, you know, and aggravate the spirits, probably end up causing more issues because they're just trying to get confirmation that they're there or catch them on camera or whatever, versus trying to help whoever's dealing with it, you know, dealing with the issue. Those I don't really tend to care for. I like the ones where the people are trying to not just confirm that, yes, you have activity, but figure out, you know, what caused the spirits to get trapped and how to, you know, help them cross over or rid them from the property so that the living people can have, you know, a more normal life. I think those are really good.
Okay. Well, what's your opinion about people claiming that they have psychic abilities, and would you put that into a story?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think I put a little bit of that into Three Witches in a Small Town. I think, you know, a lot of people growing up here in the mountains, you know, their, you know, grandmothers or mothers or, you know, they usually don't call them psychic, but you know, they just know things. I think anyone can develop their intuition to, you know, a surprising point. Even if it's just through dreams, like, you know, my whole family knows if so-and-so has this dream, you know, need to expect this or that or, you know, however. And I know of myself, you know, there's certain symbols that when I dream about them, you know, I know, oh, hey, this is going to happen, or, you know, oh, I better be careful, this could happen. I don't know that I would consider that truly psychic. Just having more heightened sense of awareness of, you know, shifting energies around you and things that may be coming. But I do think some people have that to a much stronger degree. And I think as far as, you know, using tarot cards or runes or bones or whatever to kind of give themselves a focus to focus their intuition into an easier way to express it. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I do try to tell people, though, that if you are seeking out advice from somebody like that, to realize that it's just the path that you're on now, you know, and you can change it at any time. It's not set in stone, and you know, it's kind of advice. They see where you are right now, but you could change it at any point.
Okay. Well, I'll ask you one more question, and I'll let you go, because I know that you work today, and I don't want to keep you up too much past your bedtime, if you're okay with
that. That's fine.
So what do you do when you're not so busy? What do you do to relax?
Oh, gosh. Let's see. What do I do to relax? No, I'm actually, whenever I'm not working or doing something with my daughter, I'm usually spending time with her around the house. I'm very much a homebody. I love to be at home with my books and my things and just lay around and watch TV and read. I do love to go hiking. And spend time. I've had the same best friend for, gosh, 26, 27 years. So she's my sister at this point, and spending time with her is one of my favorite things. So, and I get inspiration for my books from doing all those things. I like to be lazy and stay in my cozy environment.
Ain't nothing wrong with that. Mm-mm, I agree.
No.
So, what's your plans for the rest of 2019? You know, do you have any other projects that you're working on? Anything that you can discuss?
Absolutely. I'm going for 2019. I'll be putting out the fourth book in the Gravedigger series, which is called Under the Grave, and which will hopefully be out, gosh, next few weeks. And then finish up. I would like to have the fifth and final book in the series completed before the year is up. Even if it's not released, I would at least like to have it completely written and ready to be published. And then I'm also working on this young adult book mainly for my daughter. But I think I'll find a pretty good audience with it. And the story behind it is actually pretty fascinating. We were at the park with our cousins. She has a little girl younger than my daughter, and they were playing on the swings, and it was kind of a dreary day, and there weren't really any other kids at the park. It was just us, and for some reason, there were these two orange cones on the sidewalk under this tree, and I think it's because it had rained quite a bit previously, and there was a good-sized puddle there, so I guess it was just either draw kids to it or keep them out of it. I'm not sure. But while the kids were swinging, all of a sudden, this doll drops out of the tree right between these cones, like one of the American Girl dolls. So it's a good-sized baby doll. It just falls out of the tree right between these cones. And we just kind of looked, my cousin and I just kind of looked at each other and said, that was really strange. And so the kids run over to look at it, and its hair's all matted, and it's not got any clothes on, and it's in rough shape. And my daughter, who's obsessed with dolls, she was like, can we take it home? And I was like, you don't want to take this doll home? I was like, she looks awful. And, my cousin's daughter, she was, littler, but she's like, oh, doll. And her mom was like, no, we're not taking that home. And so my little girl knows how to get to me where we rescue animals and stuff. She's like, but mom, she's all by herself and she doesn't have anybody to take care of her. And I can't leave her. And I was like, okay, put the doll in the car. We'll figure it out. And so, I have a picture of her and everything, like from before we picked her up where she fell. And everyone was telling me, they're like, if your house is haunted now, we know exactly why. But we took her home and I cut her hair and cleaned her up and she put cute clothes on her. But because it was just such an odd incident, my little girl named her Creepy Connie is her name. And so she was telling me, it's been a little over a year ago, I guess, since it happened. And she's talked to me ever since. She's like, Mom, you really need to write a book about Creepy Connie. And I was like, well, maybe one day. So I finally kind of got an idea for the story. It's a little darker than what happened in real life, but it still kind of mimics it. And so that's what I'm working on right now, is a book about a doll named Creepy Connie.
Ooh, that sounds awesome. It may be cousin to Chucky.
Right.
Well, I'm hosting a Santa Fest on November 2nd there in Russell County at Lebanon. If you get a chance, mm-hmm. Come on up. We got writers and all kinds of paranormal researchers, ancient civilization. You name it. I think we just about got it all this year.
And this that sounds great.
If you get a chance, come up. I'd love to meet you and let you, hang out with all those other creepy people.
I would love to. I will put it on my calendar.
Okay. Well, we'd love to have you. Next year, if you don't mind, I'll go ahead and, extend an invitation to have you maybe come up next year and speak.
That would be fantastic. I would love to.
All right. See, I know how, I know how to work people. I know people say I don't. But when you meet me, I'm kind of, when you meet me, I'm kind of intimidating because I'm a big old boy and everybody's like, you don't, you look scary. I'm like, well, I don't mean to.
Well, I look forward to meeting you.
I look forward to meeting you too. And I appreciate you coming on tonight. And before I go, do you have a website or any way people can get in contact with you if they've got any questions or thoughts or, you know, or just want to, I don't know, hit you up for a story?
Sure. My website is authorwilliedalton.com, and you can message me from there. And I'm also on Facebook. Same thing, Author Willie Dalton.
Well, Willie, I do. I again, I appreciate you coming on the show, and I didn't mean to keep you up too late. And we got to do this again. As soon as you get a book out or as soon as you want to talk, door's always open.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for having me. I've had fun.
Oh, I've had a great time. And again, thank you. You have a good night and you have a good weekend.
You too. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, I want to thank Willie for coming on the show. Like I said, I have nothing but respect for her and her work she's doing. You know, she's a local girl, local hometown girl, and I always try to pay homage to the people in our area. Like I said, welcome her back anytime. Next Thursday night, August 8th, our special guest will be Bennett Vanderhyde, where we'll be discussing ancient alien stones. So, everyone, have a good night. Have a great weekend. Everyone be safe and nothing but love. Please, everybody, be careful out there. I know how people get in the summertime. That's it for us tonight. I want to thank everyone that took the time to listen in. I'd like to give a big shout out to the Vibe Radio Network and to Ryan for putting up with us. Also to all the first responders and our men and women in the armed services, thank you for your service and the sacrifices that you and your families make every day to keep our great nation safe. Tune in next week to another exciting show starting at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Everyone can go to our Facebook page Within the Chaos, and don't forget to like our page to see upcoming guests along with past shows, postings, or you can also go to my website at www.blackdiamondps.org or blogtalkradio.com/Vibe Radio Network. Also, we have a YouTube channel, so go to YouTube. Look up Within the Chaos for past shows. Thanks again. Until next week, everyone have a safe weekend and have a good night. And love you all. Be careful out there.
I'm sorry, but I don't want to be an emperor. That's not my business. I don't want to rule or conquer anyone. I should like to help everyone if possible. Jew, Gentile, black man, white. We all want to help one another. Human beings are like that. We want to live by each other's happiness, not by each other's misery. We don't want to hate and despise one another. In this world, there's room for everyone, and the good earth is rich and can provide for everyone. The way of life can be free and beautiful, but we have lost the way. Greed has poisoned men's souls, has barricaded the world with hate, has goose-stepped us into misery and bloodshed. We have developed speed, but we have shut ourselves in. Machinery that gives abundance has left us in want. Our knowledge has made us cynical, our cleverness hard and unkind. We think too much and feel too little. More than machinery, we need humanity. More than cleverness, we need kindness and gentleness. Without these qualities, life will be violent, and all will be lost. The aeroplane and the radio have brought us closer together. The very nature of these inventions cries out for the goodness in men, cries out for universal brotherhood, for the unity of us all. Even now, my voice is reaching millions throughout the world, millions of despairing men, women, and little children, victims of a system that makes men torture and imprison innocent people. For those who can hear me, I say, do not despair. The misery that is now upon us is but the passing of greed, the bitterness of men who fear the way of human progress. The hate of men will pass, and dictators die, and the power they took from the people will return to the people. And so long as men die, liberty will never perish. Soldiers, don't give yourselves to brutes, men who despise you, enslave you, who regiment your lives, tell you what to do, what to think, or what to feel, who drill you, diet you, treat you like cattle, use you as cannon fodder. Don't give yourselves to these unnatural men, machine men with machine minds and machine hearts. You are not machines. You are not cattle. You are men. You have the love of humanity in your hearts. You don't hate. Only the unloved hate, the unloved and the unnatural. Soldiers, don't fight for slavery, fight for liberty. In the 17th chapter of St. Luke it is written, the kingdom of God is within man, not one man nor a group of men, but in all men, in you. You, the people, have the power to create machines, the power to create happiness. You, the people, have the power to make this life free and beautiful, to make this life a wonderful adventure. Then in the name of democracy, let us use that power. Let us all unite. Let us fight for a new world, a decent world, that will give men a chance to work, that will give youth a future and old age a security. By the promise of these things, brutes have risen to power, but they lie. They do not fulfill that promise. They never will. Dictators free themselves, but they enslave the people. Now let us fight to fulfill that promise. Let us fight to free the world, to do away with national barriers, to do away with greed, with hate and intolerance. Let us fight for a world of reason. A world where science and progress will lead to all men's happiness. Soldiers, in the name of democracy, let us